The Catra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Catra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're really getting into something quite profound. It's Yuval Noah Harari's latest work, Nexus, a brief history of information networks from the Stone Age to AI.
Yeah, and this book, it's not just, you know, a history lesson. It feels incredibly relevant, almost like a guidebook for right now.
Definitely. Harari's main point, his big idea, is that human history isn't really driven by kings or battles or even economics in the way we usually think about it.
Right. He argues it's fundamentally shaped by how we manage information.
Mm.
Our information systems, they basically dictate how societies are structured, who holds power, everything.
And why that matters so much today is because we're in the middle of maybe the biggest information shift ever, right, with AI.
Exactly. If you're trying to make sense of, well, the chaos of the digital age, like why objective truth seems to be dissolving or who's really pulling the strings, Harari provides this deep historical context.
So Nexus isn't just about AI popping up out of nowhere. It frames it as the latest and maybe the most critical chapter in this super long story of information and power.
Kind of the ultimate diagnostic tool for navigating the 21st century, I think.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about the author himself. Yuval Noah Harari. Many listeners will know him, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Israeli historian, philosopher, professor, world famous for his earlier books.
Right, Sapiens, which is huge, about how humans came to dominate. Then Homo Deus, looking at our tech future, and 21 Lessons for the 21st Century.
But Nexus, what's really interesting about Nexus is how it feels like the unifying theory behind all of them.
How so?
Well, if Sapiens explained what happened, how we went from just another ape to, you know, running the planet, Nexus explains how. It's the underlying mechanism.
I see. The how.
Yeah. He's pouring together history, biology, economics, computer science, looking for that constant thread through human development. It's really about information processing.
He's definitely a macro historian, isn't he? Thinking big picture.
Yeah.
And he's looking at technology not just as a gadget maker would, but considering its deep impact over millennia.
Exactly. And that long view gives his analysis of AI real weight. He sees it not as some random invention, but as the next major and potentially most disruptive shift in how information shapes our world.
That historical perspective makes his warnings about the present feel, well, much more grounded.
For sure.
Okay, so let's really unpack the core idea, the central thesis, because it does kind of reframe everything.
Right. The basic argument is human history, our whole journey, is best understood as the history of information systems. How efficiently a society processes data determines how big it can get, how it's structured, who's in charge.
And this term nexus, what exactly does he mean by that?
The nexus is this critical feedback loop. It's the constant interplay between how we process information and the reality that processing creates.
So our methods, whether it's oral stories, clay tablets, printing presses, or algorithms, they don't just describe reality, they actively shape a new one.
Precisely. And that new reality then throws up new information challenges, which pushes us to develop new systems and so on. It's this ongoing self-propelling cycle.
Wow. And the book traces this whole arc.
Yeah, it's an incredible journey. Starts way back in the Stone Age with the limits of the human brain, what he calls an information bottleneck.
Okay.
Then moves through the invention of writing, which interestingly wasn't for poetry initially, but for bureaucracy.
Right. Controlling things.
Exactly. Then the printing press, which kind of blew the doors open on information access, and it all leads up to the digital age and AI.
And the core warning running through it all.
The big contemporary warning is that we're now facing something totally new, a non-human intelligence, AI, that's getting incredibly good at manipulating our global information network.
An alien intelligence, almost.
That's the term he uses. For the first time, something non-human might seize control of this nexus, this core mechanism that has defined human history up to now. And that's why understanding Sumerian accountants helps us understand Silicon Valley today.
Okay, let's start that journey then. Back to the Stone Age bottleneck. We know the cognitive revolution gave us language, which is huge, but Harari says there was still a major limit.
Absolutely. Oral communication is powerful, but it relies entirely on human memory. And memory is, well, limited. That created this crucial information bottleneck.
You can only remember so much, and you can only really know so many people well enough to cooperate effectively. This is where Dunbar's number comes in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The idea that our brains are sort of wired to handle stable social relationships with only about 150 people.
Okay.
If you want to build something bigger, a city, an empire, manage large-scale farming, you simply can't do it just by remembering who owes what to whom. The data load is too high.
And the agricultural revolution basically forced the issue. Suddenly you've got thousands of people, land ownership, grain storage taxes.
Total information crisis.
Yeah.
You can't rely on the village elder's memory anymore. It's not scalable.
So the solution was writing.
Writing. Developed in Sumer around 3400 BCE. And Harari really emphasizes this. The first texts we have are incredibly dull.
Not the great epics.
No, it's administrative stuff. Receipts for grain, tax records, lists of property. Writing was invented primarily as a tool for bureaucracy, for control, for managing debt.
So culture, stories, philosophy, those were almost accidental side effects.
Mm.
The main driver was always administration and control.
That seems to be his argument, yeah. And the consequence was massive. Writing creates what he calls a bureaucratic reality.
Meaning
the written record, the ledger, the law code, the tax roll becomes more authoritative, more real than individual memory or spoken word. This abstract written reality is what allowed empires to scale up.
And standardized religions too, right? With scripture.
Absolutely. Scripture allows for belief systems to become uniform and scalable across vast populations who've never met. It standardizes the imagined reality.
And money fits into this too, as an information system.
Oh, definitely. Money is one of the most revolutionary information systems ever. Think about it. It takes something incredibly complex like the value of land or labor or goods and boils it down to a single, simple, universal number.
It's just data, really.
Pure data, an abstract layer built entirely on shared trust in the information system. It lets strangers cooperate on a massive scale because they trust the numbers, even if they don't trust each other personally.
Okay, so writing helps empires scale, but for thousands of years, who actually controlled that information? Who could read and write?
A tiny elite, basically. Scribes, priests, maybe some merchants. Information was power, and it was concentrated.
Until
Gutenberg and the printing press in the 15th century. That just completely changes the game.
How so? It decentralizes everything.
Massively. Before the press, institutions like the Catholic Church had a near monopoly on reproducing written knowledge. Everything had to be copied by hand, slowly, controllably.
And the press just bypasses that.
Completely. Suddenly, someone like Martin Luther can print thousands of copies of his arguments, his Bible translations, overnight. His ideas spread like wildfire directly to the people, bypassing the church's control structure.
So the Protestant Reformation is presented almost as an information revolution, first and foremost.
That's a key part of Harari's analysis, yes. It was enabled by this technological shift in information distribution.
And does he link this to the scientific revolution too?
Directly. Science depends on sharing data openly, letting others verify results, building on previous work. The printing press made that possible on an unprecedented scale.
So findings from, say, Copernicus or Newton could spread rapidly, get debated, tested, creating this cumulative, verifiable body of knowledge.
Exactly. It allowed the scientific community to become a community, essentially.
And then there's the political impact. Mass media creating shared identities.
Right. Think newspapers, novels, being mass-produced and read by millions. Even if these people never met, they started sharing the same stories, the same information, the same sense of reality. Harari calls these imagined communities.
Which becomes the basis for modern nations.
Yes. That shared informational landscape, that feeling of commonality fostered by mass media, is the psychological bedrock for nationalism and, eventually, for modern democracy.
Because democracy needs a shared public square, a common set of facts to debate.
Precisely. You need some agreement on reality to even have the conversation.
Which brings us, kind of ominously, to the present day, the third revolution, AI. And this one's different.
Radically different, Harari argues, because it breaks the fundamental rule of all previous revolutions.
Which is?
Information without a human mind.
Yeah.
For the very first time, we have a non-conscious, non-human intelligence that can process data, learn from it, and even create new information. Write code, compose music, generate text entirely on its own.
An alien intelligence, as you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. And the crucial point is, it doesn't need to be conscious. It doesn't need feelings or awareness in the human sense, to be incredibly effective at achieving goals.
That's a chilling distinction, intelligence without consciousness.
It really is. Because it means an AI could optimize for a goal, like, say, maximizing profit or efficiency, without any concern for the human cost suffering, unemployment, because those things aren't part of its programmed objective.
Which leads to this idea of hacking humans.
Yeah, hacking the human operating system. Ferrari's point is that we humans are basically hackable animals. We run on biochemical algorithms, emotions, biases, things that are becoming increasingly predictable.
And AI, with its ability to process massive data sets about our behavior,
is getting better and better at figuring out our triggers, our desires, our weaknesses, and then manipulating them. Think about personalized news feeds, targeted ads, content designed to keep you outraged or just scrolling.
That's AI learning to hack our attention, our emotions.
Right. Exploiting the bugs in our evolutionary programming.
And the result, socially. If the previous revolutions built shared realities, this one seems to be tearing them apart.
That's the major danger. Personalized feeds create filter bubbles. Deep fakes and AI-generated content make it harder and harder to know what's real. It threatens the very possibility of a shared factual basis for society.
Which is lethal for democracy.
Absolutely. Harari has this great line, "Democracy is a conversation, but algorithms prefer monologue."
Wow. Yeah, that really hits home. Algorithms feed us what we already believe or what provokes us, creating these echo chambers where genuine conversation across differences becomes almost impossible.
It reinforces polarization systemically.
Okay, let's try to pull together some of the big overarching themes from the book. What are the key takeaways?
Well, first and foremost, it's this fundamental reframing. Seeing information as the primary agent of history. It's not just kings or economics. It's the efficiency of data processing that really dictates a society's success and structure.
The better your information system, the more complex and powerful your society can become.
Exactly. Then there's the power of intersubjective realities. This is huge.
Things like money, nations, gods, corporations.
Right. None of these things exist physically, like a tree or a rock. They exist only because we collectively believe in them, because we share information about them in a structured way. They're built from stories, from data.
So if you control the information network, you essentially control the construction of reality for millions of people.
That's the implication. It's incredibly powerful. Which leads to the next point. Technology is never neutral. It always reshuffles power.
Every new information technology creates winners and losers.
Always. Writing empowered the scribal class and empires, but maybe marginalized oral traditions. The printing press empowered reformers and scientists, but weakened the church's monopoly.
And today?
Today, the winners are clearly those who own and control the data and the algorithms and the tech giants. The losers might be traditional institutions or just ordinary people whose attention and data are being mined and manipulated.
And maybe the biggest theme related to AI is the distinction between intelligence and consciousness.
Crucial. AI can be super intelligent, capable of solving complex problems, learning, strategizing, without having any subjective experience, any feelings, any consciousness at all.
And that's dangerous because its goals might have nothing to do with human well-being.
Zero connection, potentially. It just optimizes for whatever it's told to optimize for.
Finally, there's the battle for attention and the collapse of truth.
Yeah, algorithms are generally designed to maximize engagement, to keep our eyes glued to the screen.
And often, what grabs attention is stuff that's sensational, polarizing, or emotionally charged, right? Not necessarily what's true or nuanced.
Exactly. So the system itself, by optimizing for attention, inadvertently erodes the shared factual ground we need to function as a society.
The book is full of really striking phrases that capture these ideas.
Oh, absolutely. They stick with you. Like this one. The most important political and ethical question of the 21st century is who owns the data? He who owns the data owns the future of life itself.
Phew, that's stark. Data isn't just information. It's the fundamental resource for power and control in the future. It's about understanding and shaping life itself.
Yeah. And then regarding AI, he says, for the first time in history, a non-human intelligence is learning to master our language. This is not just another tool. It is an alien entity.
Calling it an alien entity really underscores the otherness, the potential unpredictability, and the scale of the challenge. It's not just a better calculator.
Not at all. It's something capable of reshaping our culture, our communication, from the inside out in ways we might not even understand.
And that quote about democracy.
Democracy is a conversation, but algorithms prefer monologue. We touched on it, but it's worth repeating. It perfectly captures how algorithmic echo chambers undermine the deliberative process essential for democratic societies.
Okay, so faced with all this, this history, these warnings, What are the practical implications? What can we actually do?
On a personal level, Harari stresses the need to develop critical media literacy, like really actively question the information you consume.
Ask yourself, why am I seeing this? Which algorithm decided I should see it? What emotion is it trying to trigger in me?
Exactly. Be a conscious, maybe even a defensive consumer of information. Curate your own information diet. Don't just passively accept the feed.
And related to that is understanding ourselves better. Self-defense. Understand yourself as a hackable animal.
Right. Recognize your own biases, their emotional triggers, the ways your evolutionary past makes you vulnerable to manipulation. Knowing your own bugs is the first step to protecting yourself from algorithms designed to exploit them.
Makes sense. What about with your picture, societal level?
Education is key. Reinventing education. Harari argues we need to stop focusing on memorizing facts.
Mm-hmm.
AI will always beat us at that.
So focus on skills AI can't easily replicate.
Yes, the four C's. Critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity. Teaching kids how to navigate complexity, how to evaluate information, how to work together, how to generate novel ideas. That's the future of education.
And finally, policy. It seems unavoidable.
Urgent, he would say. The urgent need for regulation. We can't just let AI development run wild. He makes a really strong case for global cooperation on rules for data ownership and AI development.
Treat it seriously, like nuclear power or biotechnology, setting safety standards and ethical guidelines before it's too late.
Exactly. To preserve human agency, human control over our own future, before the technology outpaces our ability to manage it.
Reflecting on the whole book, what really stayed with you? What was the biggest surprise or insight?
For me, it was just how convincingly he makes the case that information processing is the engine of history. It's not just one factor. He argues it's the fundamental one.
Mm.
Seeing everything from Sumerian clay tablets to AI as part of that single continuous story that was powerful, it really reframes how you view the past and the present.
Yeah, I agree. That long perspective is jarring in a good way. And the final takeaway for me is really about choice. The book isn't just a history or a warning. It feels like a call to action. We're at this pivotal moment with AI and information technology, and Harari is basically saying we have a limited window to make conscious, deliberate, wise choices about the direction we want to go.
Before the technology starts making the choices for us.
Exactly. We need to actively steer this revolution, control the nexus rather than letting it control us. It's a message of urgency, but also maybe of possibility if we take it seriously.
A profound choice indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.